From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
My guest is James Whitaker. He's a keynote speaker and author, podcast host, film producer, entrepreneur, and coach. And he's joining me today to talk about the book that he has edited and annotated. That's Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, How to Unlock the Awesome Power of You. James Whitaker is the New York Times bestselling author of Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy. It was the official companion to the multi-million dollar film based on Napoleon Hill's timeless classic, Think and Grow Rich. He speaks to us now about the importance of three essential principles put forth by Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite. Those are self-discipline, learning from defeat, and the golden rule. James Whitaker, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit. You know, we all, if we hear the name Andrew Carnegie, we think about industrialists, philanthropists, we think about libraries, and then we also know the name Napoleon Hill, but not quite as well. What is the relationship between those two men?
Well, Napoleon Hill and Andrew Carnegie's, lives and legacies now are really inextricably linked. So Napoleon Hill was a young reporter from Wise County in Virginia who in 1908 was tasked with interviewing Andrew Carnegie, who, of course, as you said, is the famous industrialist from Scotland who arrived in America as a penniless immigrant and was able to accumulate one of the greatest fortunes in existence. And it was really after that conversation that Napoleon Hill went on at Carnegie's behest and interviewed hundreds of the most successful people who ever lived. And the commonalities between those people and how they became successful is what Napoleon Hill condensed into his achievement philosophy, which is what became Think and Grow Rich in 1937, which is the best-selling self-help book of all time. So, and the Napoleon Hill Foundation today continues that wonderful work.
Probably the first self-help book, really, and still around today. And those are the tenets that we, you know, still try to strive for. So a century later, this Napoleon Hill Foundation has come up with this conversation. And you, as a Napoleon Hill scholar, are kicking this off with talking about what our goals should be for reaching prosperity in our own lives. Tell us about Mental Dynamite.
Well, this book is really an invitation for the reader to engage with life. It's really a blueprint for being able to stage a comeback if you're facing a difficult time. So it's being released at really the perfect time, considering the pandemic and social unrest and the division that we're seeing in politics at the moment. There's so much going on here in the world. You know, we've got social media, we've got media more broadly, all of these different things are big challenges for the world, not to mention what I think is the real pandemic being the mental health crisis, which I believe we're in right now. So this book really provides the readers with timeless principles that proves that there are solutions that have worked for hundreds of years to solve every single problem that we are faced with, and it will really help solve every problem we're in today. I mean, we're talking about homelessness, education, democracy, of course, individual achievement, how companies should be successful. It's a very much a broad stroke of success in this book that I think will be, will help a lot of people around the world.
So is Mental Dynamite an adaptation of Think and Grow Rich? Does it include many of the same tenets? Is it just a 2020 rendition or version of many of the same concepts in Think and Grow Rich?
So it's very different. It's actually completely different. So I wrote a book in 2018 called Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy, and that's a modern companion to the original Think and Grow Rich. So what I did with that one, it's really a collection of short stories because it starts each chapter, which is each principle, with an overview of each principle in a modern day context. And then it goes into a collection of short stories of people who are alive today who personified those principles. I think it's impossible for anyone to really try and recreate Think and Grow Rich. It would be like rewriting the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And with Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, what we did was we say, cool, rather than include our analysis of that conversation, let's go straight to the original conversation. So this book actually contains excerpts for the first time from that fascinating conversation between Hill and Carnegie. And I have gone in and added examples of individuals and companies who are the most successful today, who best personify those lessons. And when I say successful, I'm talking about in terms of course, financial success, but also in terms of happiness and raising the standards of living and really being just generally making the world a better place. I mean, some of the companies are companies like Costco, who pay their staff double the national average and give almost all of their staff company-sponsored health insurance. A lot of people might think about that example and say, well, would that be at the sacrifice of stockholders and their share price? But that's not true, because the share price has increased almost 400% in the last 20 years. There is a way to be financially successful in a way that massively helps society and your staff too. And it's a big theme of this book.
Yeah, it's all wrapped into empathy and compassion and wanting to raise the situations of everyone. And yet at the same time, we're having a greater chasm between the rich and the poor in this country. Yet I think that's exactly what you're trying to counter. Let's just talk about the most important lessons from the conversations between Andrew Carnegie and Napoleon Hill. If you're at a cocktail party and, you know, you're forced into five lines about the greatest lessons from those conversations, what are those five lines?
Oh, it's a good question. Probably the biggest one would be learning from defeat. So how we respond to adversity when it inevitably strikes is what separates ordinary people from extraordinary achievers. And unfortunately, a lot of us look at successful people or people who have things that we don't have, and we think they've got it all figured out and that they have not experienced the adversity that I have. And it's really not the case. I mean, some of the stories that are included in this book, people like Jessica Cox, who was born without arms, that became the world's first armless pilot. I mean, literally without arms, she was in the cockpit flying planes, which is an incredible story of overcoming adversity. She can put in contact lenses. She can drive a car. There are people like Jim Stovall, who was blind at the age of 18 and went on to become the author of 30 best-selling books. I mean, there are so many stories like this that talk about learning from defeat. And I mean, this book is released at a perfect time and I think could help people given the situation that we're in the world today.
Absolutely. So, you know, one of the words I don't see in here is resilience, although I'm sure you, if I read word for word through cover to cover through your book, we would see resilience, but it is what comes out of operating in the face of adversity. And it's probably why those, you know, I think of the dreamers, for example, who were brought to this country when they were very young and had no choice in the matter. And they have been forced into adverse situations by the limitations. And yet they have developed such thick skin, many, many of them, and such resilience that they go on to accomplish great things, things that those perhaps born into the lap of luxury may not accomplish.
Yeah, it's a really important point. That resilience is about the best trait that someone can have. So reframing something from a negative to a positive, and also recognizing that your present circumstances can be temporary. So, I mean, other people we've got in here, like Jeanine Shepherd, who was an athlete, as a cross-country skier, who had qualified for the Winter Olympics in Calgary, but was hit by a truck before she went. I mean, she was spent 9 months in the spinal ward, and then today is a walking paraplegic, which is crazy. I mean, she's got more than 1 billion views online. She's actually become one of my closest friends. That resilience is such an important piece, because we recognize that if we're alive today, every single adversity or achievement that we have had is as a result of us overcoming obstacles. So when you think about it like that, we should be proud that we're here today and proud that we're a lot stronger and much better equipped to face adversity than we would have been previously. And actually, one of the big questions I ask every single person who is a guest on my podcast is, tell me, I say, what is the biggest adversity you have faced that you have been able to identify an equivalent benefit from? And I ask that question because it always, first of all, it gets the best answers. but it also really reminds us that failure is often a blessing in disguise. And one of the other big quotes that we mention in this book is that necessity is the mother of invention. And if you're, you know, if your back's up against the wall, there are stories of people like Nelson Mandela, who when he was in prison in South Africa, he actually tried to learn the language of his captors. He learned Afrikaans so he could communicate with them and start trying to convert them to his cause. And of course, he went on to become president of South Africa, which is an incredible milestone. So we have so much more power over our future and indeed over our present than we give ourselves credit for.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is James Whitaker. He has edited Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, How to Unlock the Awesome Power of You. And so part of this, I think, James, is those who encounter great adversity, you know, going back to, say, Janine Shepherd, the cross-country athlete who was hit by the truck, you have to first tell yourself or figure out how to be happy. And you mentioned in the beginning of, you know, our mental health challenges right now in the face of this adverse situation of COVID. How do we be happy?
Well, first of all, we've got to let go of the one syndrome of adding our happiness as a carrot on the end of the horizon. That I'll be happy if, that I'll be happy when, I'll be happy if I had that person's body or that person's husband or wife, or I'll be happy when I have that house. Because inevitably what happens when we experience those achievements is that we're disappointed, because it's often the, you know, the fun and is really in the journey of getting there. So you need to stop making your happiness conditional. So in that Janine Shepherd example that you just mentioned there, her happiness was completely attached to winning a gold medal at that Winter Olympics. So once she realized that not only could she never ski again or never be a professional athlete again, her entire reason for life had all but evaporated, and she was left with a body that was broken beyond repair. But she was able to forge an incredible career, and you know, she's still doing amazing things today by basically saying, you are not your body, we are the defiant human spirit. And I love that. It's such a powerful message of empowerment. So being happy in the present, I think, is about as is about as good of any skill as we can have. So a lot of that can come right down to what breathing exercises you're doing. If you're entering an environment that you feel like is going to be particularly hostile, whether it's a business meeting or something in your relationship, maybe taking a few deep breaths beforehand and think about or focus on what energy you want to bring into that situation, and then think about what outcome you want from that situation. So by doing that, we take the emotion out of it. We get out of our own head a little bit. And, you know, often the energy that we're feeling attaches meaning to that situation that we're in. So if we're in a negative mindset, we're more likely to attach a negative meaning to that situation.
That's so nice. You know, it's funny when you talk about guests that come on your podcast, when you pose that question to them, what's the greatest moment of adversity in your life, and what have you that you've learned the most from? I suspect those who you invite to come on your podcast are already these people who have overcome great things. They've accomplished great things. But how many people, myself included, I would not know how to answer that question, because I haven't put myself into thinking into that mind frame of adversity being a very positive thing to happen to you in your life. I wouldn't know how to answer it. How many people get stumped by that?
It's a good question. None of them actually, as in yours is a good question, not mine is a good question. but all the guests are actually, you know, sometimes there's a pause for a couple of seconds while they think it over. But if anyone out there is thinking about, well, how do I apply that in my own life? I would get a pen and paper, and I would write down 5 to 10 of the biggest adversities or challenges that you have faced that come to mind. So one of the biggest adversities that I had when I was in high school, I had this really debilitating battle with anxiety. It was, you know, it almost destroyed my life. It was, you know, it led to a horrible depression and all these different things from the age of about 14 up until I was about, you know, 20, 21 years old. And it was only after I had thrown up and fainted, and, you know, which was not uncommon with that situation, that I basically was in sheer disgust. I looked in the mirror and I just couldn't stand who was staring back at me. And it was only when That was really the turning point of my own life. But about 2 years ago, Success Magazine asked me to write a story for their magazine. And I thought, well, everything that I do in my career is about sharing other people's stories. Maybe this is my opportunity to share my own story, which, to be quite honest, I was uncomfortable doing at the time. And I had so many people reach out to me to say that, wow, I'm going through anxiety, or I had a similar journey. So in my one of my biggest adversities, and that probably is the biggest adversity I have ever faced, because of just how crazy it was at the, you know, a very impressionable time for my life, when I don't even think it was my life. I very much felt like a malfunctioned human destined for the scrap heap. That became a massive benefit for me, that Success Magazine said, wow, that's amazing. We'll give you 4 pages in this magazine that has, you know, millions of print copies around the world, and led to me having such strong empathy for anyone who's going through a very difficult situation, and really underpins the mission that I have today about wanting to really help people and give back.
And overcoming something like anxiety is overcoming a physiological challenge that is huge. And listen to you now. This is wonderful. Going back to your example of Costco, you know, it seems as though large corporations are not necessary. It would take a lot to convince them that, you know, they will do well by doing good. How much do you think this tide is shifting? And obviously, this is part of what you're trying to do here, is to talk about, you know, how doing the right thing will benefit you in the long run.
I think the tide is definitely shifting. And I think we're starting to see that more broadly with things like the electrical vehicle market. We know that that's growing. We know that a lot of governments have regulated that companies, you know, around the world, that if companies don't reach certain emissions targets by certain dates, they have to pay billions of dollars in fines. But these companies are already innovating and going towards that anyway. Look at companies like Tesla. It's now the most valuable automotive maker in the world. It's more valuable than car companies that have been around for longer than 100 years combined. So that is a good example of something in a parallel industry. There are companies like Chobani, the yogurt company,
right,
who they said after they hit $1 billion in sales, that they then gave away 10% of their company to its 2,000 employees, who, of course, it's the companies that built that product. And there's the McCormick Spice Company from Baltimore. I mean, all of these companies are referenced in our new book, Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite. McCormick was basically a company that was built on being one giant mastermind. And what I mean by that is it's built on the spirit of friendly cooperation between everyone. There's total access from C-level executives right through to people in the trenches throughout the entire company. So managers know what's going on. And that means the imagination is unleashed at all levels, and everyone in the company is unified behind a common vision. So I think we're just more aware of this social responsibility. And I think a hidden advantage of the pandemic is that in remote work, we're seeing people start to realize what's most important to them. Now, one of those factors might be, why the hell would I spend an hour a day driving to and from work, sitting in traffic? I mean, I don't do that, fortunately, but my wife does. We live in LA. The traffic is horrible here, as it is for many cities around the world. If people could get that 1 hour back that they could spend with their families or working from home, they'd be happier and they would be more productive. So that's the type of thing that we can do. But I also think it's a bit of a double-edged sword at the very start. If someone starts a company, they bear all the risk, so they should be open to achieving more of the material value and reward that comes from that risk. But also, as corporations get more and more successful, I think we need to think about ways of if they don't give back, what can we do to start creating those initiatives? And it might just be something as simple as creating more awareness and acknowledgement of companies that are doing it well, like Costco, Chobani, and the McCormick Spice Company.
James, you mentioned a moment ago friendly cooperation between everyone in our country, especially, and well, we'll just stick with this country that is more divided than ever before, to a certain degree that has been encouraged by. I'm just wondering how we heal from that.
Well, we are in a very, very divided world. And I actually think that the biggest existential threat to humanity is division. And, you know, we saw the debate the other night. I mean, it's just horrible what's going on. And of course, President Trump, I think even people who are his biggest supporters would admit that he is extremely divisive with his rhetoric. And no one wants to see that. Like, people enjoy it's not a necessity for someone in power, but it should be a greatly revered trait to have someone in power who's just, you know, just a good person and focusing more on the positive energy. But I do think there's a big product of that the era we're in at the moment is around where social media drives such a large part of our attention each day. And the social media posts that perform well are the ones that people engage on. And people engage on posts they either love or they hate. So it's in the best interest of every single company and every individual who is putting content out there to do something, to post content that initiates that reaction. And that's a very, very sad state of affairs that we're in. But all that means, us as citizens, means that we should detach ourselves. That's how we take the power back. We detach ourselves from that negative energy and anything that puts us in a bad state of mind, because all we can really do is protect our energy source. That's what enables us to focus more on what we want to achieve. And as the more equipped we are to achieve, the better off we are at helping people. And I think that's the way forward. But above all, we need to make sure we listen to other people, ask them questions. It's going to get good answers, and stop listening with the intent of judgment. Listen with the intent of learning more about a situation that you don't know much about.
Great point to end on. James Whitaker is my guest. He's the best-selling author of Think and Grow Rich, The Legacy. It's the official companion to Napoleon Hill's timeless classic, Think and Grow Rich. He is back with having edited Andrew Carnegie's Mental Dynamite, How to Unlock the Awesome Power of You. James, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Let's see, we can find you at James Witt. That's WHITT.com. Such a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.